That's the great Ray Bryant trio. Ray Bryant on piano, that is, with Sea Jam Blues. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, June the 20th. And as Gary had said in the segue, there are many things happening in the East, the so-called Middle East. I always ask, middle of what, east of where? I don't know why they call it that. But in anticipation of preliminary peace talks today between the United States and the Taliban on neutral ground in Doha, Qatar, the Afghan Taliban say they're ready to hand over U.S. soldier Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl in exchange for five of their senior operatives being held currently at Guantanamo Bay Prison. And you might know that Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, yesterday suspended talks with the United States to protest the fact that he and his government are being left out of whatever is passing for peace negotiations to end the 12-year war in his country. Today in Brazil, though, coordinated protests continue in cities across South America's largest nation, and they are meant to up the ante on demands on the government for a shift in social and economic priorities. Marisa Barbosa is editor and chief of the Gazeta Brazilian News, the oldest newspaper serving the Brazilian community in South Florida. She has been reporting on developments back home, and she joins us now. Thank you, Marisa, for being with us. Thank you so much. Well, today your paper comes out. I didn't have a chance to see what's on the front page, but what is your front page story today?
Well, our front page this week is about the manifestation that had just happened in Miami this last Tuesday, because the Brazilians in South Florida, which is a big population, is joining It's doing support to the Brazilians in Brazil, and as you said, in about 80 cities in Brazil, they confirmed that they will have manifestations today still. And São Paulo, for example, is the seventh day that they're doing a manifestation.
Well, when you say manifestations, just to explain to the audience, you mean it's recent protests or demonstrations, and the word that you use is manifestation. It's the same thing. What exactly is the reason for the protests?
Well, it started, Eutrice, as a protest, and against the raise on the bus fare in many cities. It started on some cities on the 2nd of June, beginning of June. Different cities in Brazil started raising the price of the bus fare. And so the protests were against the raise. It was in 20 cents of reais, which is about 10 cents of dollar, doing like in a quick currency translation here. And people started going on the streets and protesting against it. And it was small, relatively small, until last Tuesday, the 13th, when more people started joining because they saw that the police was kind of having, they were having a violent response to the protests in São Paulo, and which is interesting because in São Paulo, the protests were trying to be peaceful, but what they say is that other people with different interests, of course, as it got bigger, the protests kind of got out of control, and many people with different interests, and they say some people hired by the government, which I don't know if it's some kind of conspiracy theory or if it's true for real, and started breaking things in the city. So it got out of control, and on the 13th was really out of control. And the Brazilian police is known by being violent, especially on the outskirts of the cities. But what happened is that the violent response happened in places where you never see this. You see violence in big cities in Brazil, of course, all the time. It's not the cities are not really safe, but not from the police against the population that's trying to manifest, you know. And so that's what happened, and that's why a lot more people, I believe, now they are in the hundreds of thousands, started going on the streets to protest not only what they say in the flags, it's not only about 20 cents, it's about our right to manifest and to protest on the streets, because we're not in a dictatorship for over 20 years already. And after that, many people also started raising different flags to show everything that's wrong and everything that they want change.
Mm-hmm. Well, this puts the president, Dilma Rousseff, in a very interesting position, because supposedly her government was to be a bit more sensitive to the needs of the working class and the poor of Brazil.
Yes, and yeah, that's really interesting. And she actually, after 5 days, I believe, like almost a week, she pronounced herself, she did a pronunciation about the manifestations, which is a little bit late, and everybody was waiting for her position. The police that was doing that was the state police, so the city police, and not the national, in a national level. So it was always in each state and each city that the police was acting. And so she never called the National Guard or anything. And she actually said she favors and they are going to hear what people are trying to say, you know. And that's interesting. It was really interesting. Brasilia, the capital, that the protests were in front of the government, and it was very beautiful, actually. It was very organized. And of course, some people were not, as I said before, you know, some people were still going up the buildings, and anyway, they had some kind of issues, but most of the time it was peaceful. And she said she favored, and they were going to hear. And so that's one thing, we'll see what happens. You know, everybody in Brazil, the mainstream media and also the independent media, everybody's trying to watch out for what happens now. As you were saying, the things in the Middle East, and also the I read an interesting article this week about the if this would be the Brazilian Spring, and it's what they say is that it's not analyzed actually as a Brazilian Spring, because we are not dealing with dictatorships anymore, you know. But at the same time, with the springs in North Africa, as we saw like recently, Brazilians kind of see that they can be heard. And now that Brazil is in the spotlight, I think they can really be heard about not only that the Brazilians are spending tons of money here in the United States with the new middle class that's coming here for tourism, and not only as a great country to host the sports events that are coming up, but also to show that it's not really the reality, you know. There's a lot of issues that we need to deal with, especially with the corruption of the government.
Well, you know, I was taking a look. I'm not there. I'm going by what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I was seeing, I saw a dramatic difference in the sense that the people who were in the streets would be, I would consider to be, at least based on their banners and the you know, the flags that they're waving and so forth, and based on their faces that I've seen, they look like the working class and the working poor. But I'm sure this did not meet the approval of the wealthy people in Brazil.
Well, Trish, what I see, you know, I'm also not in Brazil, but it started actually as more like a middle class movement. That's what's interesting. Not like a student movement first. I have a friend who was at the subway station, and she was going home, and she met with a group of people in the protest, and they were all young. Imagine, it's about like between 15 and 20 years old. Everybody with a smile on their faces and wearing white and bringing flowers, you know. It's that was in São Paulo. So I think it started as a movement more like towards the working group, but actually who joined, and that's why I think it's sad to say that, but Brazil is like that, you know. When, as I was saying in the beginning, it happened in an area where this kind of repression from the police never happened. And we know it happens in the outskirts of the cities, but nobody sees. But people that were in the middle of the streets at this time were journalists, like people with good education, many people that, you know, professionals, and especially people that don't need the public transportation, but they want to change. It doesn't mean they don't want safety. That doesn't mean that they don't want the country to invest money in hospitals and good transportation, because even if you have your own car, you need a better transportation and a better system, because the traffic in the big city, especially São Paulo, is insane, you know. So I believe that now the outskirts, the other parts are joining, and this movement actually, I could be wrong, but it started more as a student and middle-class movement, you know, because it started more like in the universities. I'm saying that because it started more in the universities. And you see in Brazil, even though we have public universities, most of the people that get into the universities are the ones that, the public universities are the ones that went through a good education through life, you know, because it's very competitive. Do you understand what I mean? So.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So I think that's how it started. And it's also a phenomenon Facebook, but like social media in general. So I'm all day here with my Facebook open, and I see everything that's going on. And through people that were on last Thursday, on the 13th, when it was very violent in São Paulo, there was a couple, watching the protest from their sixth floor apartment. And the police, apparently, it was the police, threw, bombs, like of moral effects, not real
right.
bombs, into the apartment where they had a two-month-old baby. So what they didn't want, apparently, was people shooting videos, but how can you control them in these days? So everything was in the internet the next day. And so that's why they couldn't really control. And even the government stepped back. And yesterday I saw some videos and pictures that were really beautiful of the police officers in São Paulo during the protests sitting on the floor as a respect to them, to say, you know, we really respect you and what you're doing. And that's why everybody changed the speech about it, you know, because in the beginning, the mainstream media was also saying, oh, you know, they just want to, it is violent, everybody that's on the street is violent, like generalizing everything. And the people were able to show that they were not really violent. And that was not the purpose. And yesterday, in one of the protests in Rio de Janeiro, the violent groups inside of the protests were trying to get into the, break buses and put fires on the streets. And the majority of the group made them stop. And actually, today I read something that one of them even said he was sorry. So I believe, I guess I got out of what you asked.
Well, you know, it's just good to hear, because we'll come back to you again, because I want to talk to you in our next little chat. I hope that would be soon. We'll talk about the reverberations in the Brazilian community here, and you happen to be in the community where that has the most Brazilians who are also U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to talk about that, but I want to thank you so much for giving us a sense of what is behind the protest, the nature of the protest, the attitudes of the people protesting, and, you know, the reaction now by the government, because now they have to respond. And there is, in the middle of all of this, at least a small ray of hope that gets bigger and bigger, hopefully, that there will be some responsible response to the demands of the protesters. But thank you so much, Marisa, for
being
here.
Thank you, Chris. I hope I helped a little bit.
Oh, you certainly did. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We now move to a situation developing both in California and in Florida, because actually the people from California are doing a particular kind of business in Florida. Our guest is Joe Guzzardi. He is with the group called Californians for Population Stabilization. And let me just give you, we'll run this little clip to give you a taste of what it is that Mr. Guzzardi and his group are about.
West, save our states. This is a message for the people of Florida from the people of California. Our states have been highly impacted by immigration. Now things could get worse. The immigration reform bill sponsored by Florida Senator Marco Rubio will admit 33 million more foreign workers to compete for American jobs, even though millions in Florida and California are struggling to find work. But that's not all. Even if you have a job, this bill will affect you and all Florida taxpayers by rewarding illegal aliens with welfare and other entitlements. The Heritage Foundation estimates the entitlement giveaway will cost taxpayers over $6 trillion. States like Florida and California stand to be impacted most, with millions of Americans looking for jobs and an entitlement system already verging on bankruptcy. Is now the time to admit more foreign job seekers and give more free entitlements to illegal aliens? Is that your idea of immigration reform? Paid for by Californians for Population Stabilization.
Well, Joe Guzzardi, you made your point very clear for your organization, the Californians for Population Stabilization. And just by way of introduction, Mr. Guzzardi is the senior writing fellow, with Californians for Population Stabilization. I take it that we can get a hint of where you're going from the very name of your organization.
That's right. Californians for Population Stabilization, or CAPS, as it is frequently referred to, was founded in 1986, coincidentally the year of the last major amnesty, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, but not formed as a direct result of that. In other words, the organization was not formed in response to the IRCA, but did come on that during that calendar year. And CAPS's position is that a lot of immigration, especially immigration into California and other border states, comes with increases in population that has added environmental challenges. So that's one of the things that we evaluate when we look at pending federal immigration legislation.
But, that's not what you said in your ad. The ad we just heard and your organization began a campaign, I believe, in Orlando on the 16th, targeting Marco Rubio. We'll get to him in a minute. But what your ad says is oppose immigration reform because they're coming to get your jobs.
Is that in any way in question? I mean, the bill, even the bill's biggest supporters, even the Gang of Eight, does not dispute in any way the fact that this legislation would create, over the first decade, 33 million new legally authorized workers. That's not disputed. So if you have 33 million new workers in Florida and California and the other 48 states, there's certainly going to be looking for jobs. They'll now be legally able to work in the United States.
So what is your prescription? Just do away with the bill?
I think the bill is a disaster for Americans. It creates 33 million new workers. It does not do anything to create greater levels of border security, and it's going to be, over the long term, extremely expensive. So where is the good in the bill?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. I'm asking you,
why
do you see only bad in the bill?
I see only bad in the bill because the bill has only bad in it. There is nothing in it for American citizens. There's everything in it for lobbyists and special interest groups and organizations that want to increase the labor force with people who are willing to work for less money. That's not disputed.
Yes, but
Marco Rubio doesn't dispute that.
But here's a sub rosa argument. The sub rosa argument is, it's not being said out loud, but it has that ring of nativism. It has a ring also
that's preposterous.
I'm sensing. I mean, it's ironic, too, that it comes from Californians because, of course, California used to belong to Mexico. And I wondered what the immigration policy would have been had Mexico been, in fact, in control of its own territory, which is now California.
I don't know what point you're trying to make. If you want to talk about the bill that's before Congress now, then we can have that conversation. Nonsense about how California was once part of Mexico is not germane to this discussion.
Well, it depends. Some people say that was
not depend
that
on
was
anything.
A different kind of immigration that occurred.
It does
by,
not depend
by
on
war.
Anything. Let's talk
where,
about
the
subject
do you get,
before us.
I don't want to interrupt you. Where do you get your 33 million figure from?
It's right there in the bill.
Well, what I'm seeing is, we're talking about 11 million.
Those are the existing illegal immigrants who would receive legal work authorization.
Correct. And then you have the various workers who will be coming in under specific programs.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's how you get the 33 million.
And those programs, they also have provisions that those jobs this is part of what is being worked out now, those jobs are supposed to be filled first. Americans are supposed to have priority for whatever jobs are available.
Look, we've been down this road before with immigration reform. There's lots of promises on the front end. There's going to be border security, and Americans are going to be protected, and employers are going to be punished. And none of it has ever happened, just like none of the things in S-744 will ever happen.
What is the concern in terms of population stabilization?
Well, 33 million new workers, 33 million new people coming to the United States, or whatever number it turns out to be, are more people. It adds to population.
The United States is not big enough to accommodate 33 million people?
The United States is, in our opinion, overpopulated as it is. There's enough people in the United States. There are not enough jobs for people existing in the for people living in the United States right now. Population growth exceeds job creation as of today. So if you're talking about adding a whole bunch of new workers across all of the employment sectors, you know, we're not just talking about low wage, we're talking about high wage too. So the answer to that question is no.
I'm very curious about how did you come to the decision that there are enough people in the United States?
That's our opinion. You obviously have a different opinion.
No, I'm curious. I'm wondering whether you arrived at that by some mathematical formula, or is it gut instinct, or what is the formula?
Our opinion that there are too many people in the United States, and we would like to limit population growth in the best interest of the people who are already living in the United States.
But when you are in the business of setting policy and criticizing policy, and when you are in the business of proposing alternatives to policy, I would imagine you'd be a little bit more scientific than saying, that's my opinion, that there are too many people. Some people may say there are too many people on your block.
Well, that would be their opinion.
And maybe you need to go.
That would be I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Look, are we going to talk about S-744, or are we going to throw out a bunch of theoretical stuff?
This is not theoretical at all. You made a statement.
Talk about the bill.
No. Mr. Ghazadi, you made a statement, and I wanted to know how you quantified that, because I like facts. You said
what's the next question?
That there are enough people in the United States. You're
Look,
speaking.
I just told you.
This, no, this
population
is not your
growth.
You are speaking as a senior fellow with this organization.
What's your next question? Let's talk about Marco Rubio.
I'm doing the interviewing, if you don't mind. So I'm still at that question. How did you come to the conclusion that there are enough people? Speaking to you, you are the senior writing fellow for this organization. That's an official capacity.
I guess you think you're doing some kind of a searing, insightful interview. I have answered
not
your question. Population growth exceeds job creation today.
No.
Okay? That's how I came to the conclusion.
And could you walk me through that, though? You know, give me the mathematical formula.
You can
formula.
Get all the data that you want from the same place that we got it from, which is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Census Bureau and the current population survey.
In fact, you know, that's funny, because just this past week, the Census Bureau noted that, in fact, the birth rate for whites is close to nil, and that by 2043, the population of the United States will be decidedly non-white. In fact, that right now there is zero growth. There's zero growth rate among the majority
How is that related to job creation?
No, it's related to your premise that there are enough people.
Look, I don't think you're really
focusing on... But the government is saying that there aren't enough people. We have to send out and get some more. This is what immigration
That's
was
That's what
for.
The government is saying. We're saying something different.
I know you're saying something different, but you're also saying something unscientific, and I'm amused that you could say that.
Well, I'm glad you're amused. What's the next question?
Tell me about Mr. Rubio. What is your beef with Marco Rubio?
My beef with Marco Rubio is that he has consistently lied about what his position is on the bill. He has said from the beginning that unless there were secure border provisions, he would not back the bill. And there are no secure border provisions, and he's backing the bill.
Okay. And what does secure border provisions, as CAPS sees it?
He said, no, not as CAPS sees it, as Marco Rubio said he saw it.
Well, you differ with it.
He said that there would be no legalization. His original opinion was that there would be no legalization unless the borders were secure. The borders are not secure, and legalization will begin immediately upon the president signing the bill. So that was his original position. He has repeated that position, but he has not walked away from the bill that does not have any enforcement.
He has not walked away from the bill, as I understand it, at all yet.
Well, why not? He promised that he would. That was his original promise.
He's still working on it. I want to know, why did this
at least four amendments that would have improved border security. And Rubio is still in the Gang of Eight. Now, look, if he is serious about his promise, he would have walked away. And it's my opinion that unless he does walk away, his political career is probably beyond reconstruction. He's now mocked by his former supporters and considered a fool by the Democrats who have clearly taken advantage of him.
Well, that's the name of the game in politics. You take your risk, as an elected official, and you may tease some people off and you please some others. That's the way it is. Sometimes
the question here is why isn't he a man of his word? He said he would walk away and he hasn't. So that's okay, right? I mean, is that okay? You're right in the sense that that's the name of the game in politics, but it doesn't make what he's doing right or forgivable.
I am still fascinated by one thing. Your campaign started in Orlando, if I imagine. Did you do a similar campaign in Miami where Marco Rubio is from?
I don't know.
Okay. I have to tell you, I mean, I could appreciate your arguments that you're making and so forth, but there is, to me, a slight discomfort that I feel about what is actually at the root of the objection. And what is at the root of the objection, again, when you fling around phrases like, there are enough people here already, people are going to be taking jobs and all of this.
Listen, tell me how you argue with that. Tell me how you see the 33 million new work visas, legally authorized U.S. workers, aren't going to take jobs. Explain to me how that could be. You know, you're giving me all of this business about how you think it's a anti-immigrant kind of an agenda. I'm asking you to tell me how the creation of 33 million new legal work authorizations, new legal work permits, is not going to have an impact on American workers or on people who are looking for jobs. In what way?
But you see, Mr. Gozardi,
no, tell me, you're giving me this high and mighty kind of an argument. I'm asking you. I'm not making a high argument. I'm asking questions. You're laughing at your little statements, and I'm asking you, that's your position, right? That they're not going to be taking jobs.
I'm asking you to tell me
how they're not going to be taking jobs.
I'm trying to tell you that I'm not into policy making on this. I'm asking the questions, and I'm amused that we have gone all the way around, and you're doing a good dance, because I know what is irritating your organization. I know exactly what's irritating your
organization. Tell me what that is.
We will talk about that shortly. I just want to know how you arrive at some of your... You're asking me to quantify what it is. I'm asking you
a question.
You are the people.
You
are the people making the decisions. You're the ones making pronouncements.
And I'm asking you to defend your counter-argument to me.
I have made no counter-argument. I've only been asking questions.
You have said that you think that our sub rosa agenda...
Yeah.
Is that, you know, people are going to be taking jobs, and you say that with a little scoff.
No, I'm asking
you to tell me how 33 million new legally authorized workers are not going to end up in jobs that would otherwise go to Americans. Answer that question. That's a reasonable question.
Are you ready for the answer, Mr. Guzzardi?
Yes, I am.
Here it is. The answer is there is... This argument about people taking other people's jobs, if you are even in the remotest sense a student of history, you'll see a pattern, a very familiar pattern. Whenever nativism sets in, it is because there is...
I object to the use of that word completely, okay? So you can strike that word from the conversation, and we can continue.
This is exactly the point. This is precisely... I have landed... Right on the point, which is why
you haven't
so
landed on anything.
You are irritated because it's true.
I'm irritated, frankly, by your stupidity, but go on ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being so kind. But the nativism and the xenophobia.
I told you to strike that word. I'm not going to entertain
You are not my boss. You do not command me to do anything.
Don't mention that word again.
Nativism. Have we lost Mr. Guzzardi?
No, I'm right here. Go on ahead. You're just proving yourself to be an idiot, but go on ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Guzzardi. You represent your organization so well. But you know what? I think we have I think we've gotten a gist of what your organization is about. It is
about reacting to nativism. You are continuing not to provide, you know, you're just throwing out all of these wild ideas that you're pulling out of the air. I'm just going to ask you one more time. You're calling me names. Now I'm going to ask you a very reasonable question that I posed to you earlier and several times. Explain to me how 33 million more legally authorized workers in the United States is not going to have an impact on existing American workers or people who are looking for jobs.
It's not my place to explain anything to you. I'm reacting to the fact that you are using this as a ruse to cover.
You don't want to learn anything
nativism,
about the bill or talk about
nativism,
Marco Rubio.
Mr. Guzzardi,
you just want to have your little fun.
You are a nativist.
So it's really amazing to me.
It's been delightful
that you could call
speaking
yourself
with
a professional journalist when you're. Just, you know, you're having a good time, so I'm glad you're having fun.
I am. I'm completely amused. I thank you so much for providing amusement to me today. I needed it. Thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk again soon, real soon. Nativism is what sets in. And people get really upset when you call them out. Well, look, we'll take a couple of calls because I don't want to start the next piece because we wouldn't have time to finish it. But certainly we'll take a couple of calls at 888-874-4888. I did not expect that it would go that way, but you have to call it out every now and then. 888-874-4888. We have a couple of minutes to take some calls, and let's at least promote PRN and a couple more programs. I'll get a drink of water in the meantime.
So-
You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. I've had a little sip of water and I'm ready to go. So, Jay from New York, you're on the air. Hello?
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, you're on the air.
That was absolutely embarrassing on his part. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. And then when you try to explain to him what you were talking about, he never even let you define what you were saying. But it just goes to show people who have an agenda will set forward and disrespect you at the drop of the hat and expect you to go along with that nonsense. I'm very, very proud of you as an African woman to stand up to that Neanderthal and not go along with that disrespect. Now, what I was calling you for was I just came across something that maybe you could help explain to me right quick. Is it true that if an employee, because of the new Obamacare rules, hire new workers where there is more than, I think it's 15 employees in the company, and gives them less than, I think, 40 hours a week, that they would not have to supply insurance to them?
Well, actually, I know it's one of the things that's happening across the board, and it's something that to take a look at. Walmart, in fact, had a huge issue with that, and several of the franchise firms, they're cutting back hours simply to make people qualify for under 40 hours of work and make them go part-time because it eases the burden on the employer to pay insurance. But we'll get to that. It's a very complex thing. I want to get as many calls as possible, Jay.
Okay.
But
all
thanks
right.
so much for calling. Thank you. Hello, Eric. You're on the air. Thank you.
Hey, you two. This is a very, very interesting show.
Thank you.
One sec. I just wanted to chime in on this immigration debate. I think the topics that are being discussed are wrong. You know, I think the idea of discussing, people in this country taking jobs away from Americans and all that stuff is pretty much nonsense. You know, I think the focus, if these people that claim to care, like this man that was just on, if they really care about American jobs, they would focus on the policy of displacing people where they are. You know, so if you go into Mexico, you send your corporations, you send your drugs, you send your arms into these countries, what do you expect? You know, I think Americans have to start understanding that people, you know, need to find a way to survive.
Well, what we're looking at and what we've been hearing actually are the coded messages. The coded messages are to whip up fear, and it's, you know, I am not at all. I think this is an awful immigration reform based on the pieces that have been discussed. Uh-huh. It's 26. This bill is more than 1,100 pages and weighs more than 26 pounds.
Yeah.
So I don't know that anybody would be conversant with every single aspect of it, but. The point we're making is that this is what is going to happen. There is going to be a serious strain of nativism running right through America, and it's going to get into the fear that other people, those people, the Mexicans, because this is the point I had made about President Obama racializing the issue to the point where people equate immigration with Mexicans.
And this is
what you get.
This is what a bill like this, you know, however many thousand pages it is, it's just a tool of confusion. It's to confuse the masses into thinking that, you know, these problems occur in a vacuum. These people are coming here to steal the American dream, and they made these elaborate plans to stow away on these places, and not understanding that these people are so many people die trying to come here out of desperation, not out of a drive for the American dream.
Not understanding one of the basic facts that he comes, I mean, the group is in a state that used to be Mexico. You know, it's a little irony there, but he didn't appreciate it. Thanks, Eric. Thanks. Hello, George, you're on the air. If you can make a fast one.
Hi, how are you, Trees?
Fine.
You handled that person magnificently. And I have one question.
Sure.
Do you get the feeling that whites are under a lot of pressure these days?
I don't know. I mean, I think there are people who are extremely concerned, but they have been concerned since 2008 with the election of Barack Obama. They're very concerned about what the writing is that they are reading on the wall. And, you know, you get this fear is always the place that people mostly act from, a place of fear. And so when you try to get into a discussion, you get the same mantra about people taking our jobs. Now, really, I have yet to see anybody really swarm the hundreds of thousands of acres of agribusiness looking to bundle lettuce and looking to mow lawns and looking to do middle low-paying jobs, or even people who have a desire simply to strike it out on their own, not knowing what the future will bring. I don't see people eager to do that.
That's correct. Those jobs are
very... But I blame in part, large measure. This was what I was talking about when the whole issue of immigration reform, first of all, it didn't have to be rushed like this. It should not have been done this way, a political solution to something that is entirely different, that requires a very complex response. Because the push by Obama is to get these folks in time for the, you know, midterm elections. The Republicans want to expand the Republican Party. So they want as many people, but not too many, and not too many of the wrong people either. You know, we want to hold off on them. So in all of this, we find that there's this insane approach to immigration. It's just insane. It makes no logical sense. And again, it's happening for political reasons. It's like asking these guys, it's the reason we don't have a budget. You know, all these great minds, and we still, this is year five of the Obama administration without a budget. Because it's about the politics of things. And I did say, and I did fault Barack Obama for racializing this issue. And I did say that the Mexicans were going to be used as the battering ram to just deal with a whole bunch of things that they can't really deal with without being called racist.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. These people are going to be fighting. All of a sudden, people are concerned, but the African Americans won't have jobs. It's like, it's all a political ruse. It's awful. Hello, Orville. You have a very, very short minute.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
I'm curious, in terms of the word nativism.
Yeah.
And people, what's a good meaning of the term?
It's them and us.
Now, if that occurs, and how do you find them within the? Can some people that is already here suffer from a them that maybe they're not aware of?
Yes, historically, as we talk about the racist pillars of our society, mm-hmm. we've always had an us and them.
And given that, and given that, also given the change in the world, can adopting that nativism or them against us create problems in the future in terms of foreign policy if other people start to do that, especially with the change of economies and things like that?
Look, there's always this aspect of the us and them. It's all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the world, the us and them.
Mm-hmm.
at one point not too long ago in Paris and France, I should say generally, it was these people coming from the French colonies mm-hmm. and corrupting. I mean, they even said it. They're corrupting the French language.
Mm-hmm. And something else I'd like to ask about. In terms of proper preparation, if people here, I hear so many people thinking that they're radicals and all kinds of different things, but I have not really seen a comprehensive plan that would take into account all kinds of things like this. Now, the population here, let's just say the poor, the extra, you know, people who are always oppressed, and not just the poor, because they're poor whites here also, which would tend to be blacks and people of color, quote unquote. Would they, given that that's something that's an aspect that seems to be on its way, nativism, and given the from that near no jobs supposedly are going to be created, and given just the, should people start to look at how to self-sustain themselves?
They should always have been doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing about the business of nativism, I mean, you will find that it is going to be used as a ploy to get people to be fighting each other who shouldn't be fighting each mm-hmm. other. Poor whites, working class whites, same thing. They're in the same space. But then, you know, nativism is an amorphous thing. If it is on the basis of race, they'll stress race. If it's on the basis of class, they'll stress class.
Or balance of all those. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If it's on the basis of power, they will stress power. Whatever they have to do, but it would be us, the real Americans, versus those who are not, the phony ones or the wannabe Americans.
So the least amongst us should be very concerned, right? You would think that the least amongst us, given the advent of this, to be very concerned and to also, to start to, when you create a plan, your own schools, your own this, or how to secure your own education, your own food.
You have to wrap up. Mm-hmm. Because
so I just want to just say that nativism is something that people should really be looking at seriously and building that into how they move forward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, we'll come to each other again at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. But at least we got through a rather unanticipated bump in that road. We'll talk tomorrow. Thanks so much.